When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good afternoon. At the tone, Pacific Daylight Time will be...
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
One step closer to my own personal hell.
This is Primetime on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.
We expect the best. We're not afraid to break someone. Do you hear me?
Primetime is your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Go ahead and clap. Mediocrity deserves applause.
Isaac Rodden.
I'm miserable. I had to get up at 10 o'clock this morning.
Jason Sakanet.
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome back. We're flying once again. Hour number three of an SOB edition of Primetime. Schultze, Ortner, and Buckley here with you as we keep things rolling. Coming up this hour, our college football playoff poinsettia. Going to get into all the college football playoff matchups for this weekend, plus our picks for the bracket, and maybe some best bets along the way. I'm really geeked for these four games, and it starts tomorrow. I think that Indiana and Notre Dame could be a really good one.
Especially with how the weather's supposed to come out there. Like, it might just play into a close game because it's so crummy outside.
And it's one of the, we'll obviously talk more about this. Despite everything we know about these 12 teams or the eight that are be playing this weekend, it still feels like there's a lot to find out about them based on who they have played across the board. It's hard to know for sure who some of these teams are and what they're capable of. Indiana, certainly one of them. They play tomorrow night. But
the thing that's funny to me is the spreads are so much more lopsided in these playoff games than a lot of the conference championship games are. But I'd make the argument that I think these games have a better chance of being closer. Now, some of them, like when I look at Indiana and Notre Dame, that might be more because of like the weather. But when you look at like a Texas Clemson matchup right now, Texas is favored by 12. I wouldn't be shocked if that game comes down to a final field goal at the end.
I don't disagree with you.
So
some of these big spreads have me going, man, I don't know if I see that.
Exactly. So I think that there's a chance that the first round games might be better than we all expect, and it might be better than the conference championship games, which were pretty darn good.
Well, let's save that for the rest of this hour, and let's first get to the hot 5 at 5.
Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, golly, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
That's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 with Isaac and Sue. Brought to you on The Fan by Victor Rico's Mexican Food. Discover Victor Rico's new savory menu items. Order in-store, online, or get it delivered straight to your door at victorricos.com. Number 5.
Well, I don't know how this one's going to be received. Maybe it depends how you are as a Blazers fan, but Chris Haynes reporting today that former number one pick Greg Oden will visit Portland for the first time in over a decade at the end of this month. He's going to come into town on December 27th. He'll be sitting courtside with his family on December 28th when the Blazers host the Mavericks, and he's expected to share his story with players and staffers about how he overcame some of his difficult obstacles. Listen, that guy caught a raw deal with some of the injuries. And then because of that and the fact that Kevin Durant panned out so well right afterwards, I think it was a really rough time for him, probably emotionally, mentally, here in Portland. I'm glad that he's back. I'm glad that Portland is seemingly opening him, welcoming him with open arms. I'll be really interested to see what he wants to share and how this thing goes.
Yeah, I think the thing with Oden, too, is like he's a year or two right before the big switch came where you didn't really play into the post as much. And so would he have even been as essential to the Blazers as they had thought at the time if he stays completely healthy? So I'm happy that he seems to have kind of gotten his life back together.
I would agree. I want nothing but good things for that guy, despite the fact the basketball part of his journey didn't really work out in the in the NBA. Well, stop me if you've heard this before. I said this was happening yesterday in our Hot 5 at 5. Nay, tonight the Blazers are actually back in action. I said last night that the Blazers were playing the Nuggets. They were not.
That's okay.
But we still have a roughly similar injury report. Matisse Thybulle still out. DeAndre Ayton, illness, still questionable. Mm. Delano Banton, questionable. Hip contusion. That one tipping off at 7 o'clock at Moda Center. Maybe a good one for them to lose.
Yeah, this is not going to be on the TV rotation. There's going to be a lot of Thursday night football, and then I might watch the highlights in the morning.
More people at the Nutcracker show I'm attending tonight are the Blazers game.
Ooh, what's the capacity at the Nutcracker?
Well, it's the Keller. I can't remember.
That's a decent size. 3,000?
I have no idea.
By the way, did you realize that Nikola Jokic is averaging a triple-double this year? He's at 30.9 points per game, 13.3 rebounds, and 9.9 assists per game.
He's the best player in the world for a reason.
And it seems like he just... Yeah, he's amazing.
He's every, like, fat guy's dream, too, when they play pickup ball. They're
him and Luka.
Like, you know what? My game's kind of like Jokic.
Couple football games tonight. Sam Houston State, eat 'em up Cats, the Bearcats with a K, I believe, are in the... Oh, damn it, what bowl is this? I never remember. They're playing Georgia Southern. Is the Boca Raton Bowl tonight?
No, that New was Orleans. Yesterday. RNL Carriers New Orleans Bowl.
Who could forget the RNL Carriers New Orleans Bowl? But Sam Houston, an underdog in this one, about to take a 21-7 lead, about 3 minutes to go in the half. Is that... extra point sneaks in. But the main course tonight on football, of course, coming up in just a matter of moments as wild card implications in the AFC West, the Chargers hosting the Broncos. Broncos are 3-point dogs on the road. A battle of former Ducks quarterbacks, Bo Nix versus Justin Herbert. We're fired up for it.
It's going to be a great game. It's going to be close both ways. It doesn't seem like it's going to be a game like last Thursday night. Right now, I've got Louisville Pitt volleyball semifinal, and that is my pregame.
Yeah, you haven't changed the channel to actual football. You're still watching the ladies.
It was on here when I walked in. Danny had it turned to this. Don't blame me.
Don't blame Danny. So Danny. That was 3 hours ago.
Danny had it turned there, and as a former volleyball coach, a former winning volleyball coach, I might add, I love the game.
Danny unfairly catching strays right now. Danny, this one isn't on you. This is on Ordner.
I didn't change the channel. I can't find the remote.
It's right in front of you.
Oh, it's behind my computer. Willingly. That's why I couldn't find it.
Not wanting to find the remote.
I wasn't looking.
Number two, how about some Cruton news? The Ducks with, an addition and a subtraction. They lose Dallas Wilson, who is going to get out of his letter of intent to presumably sign with Florida. He's a Florida kid. And despite being the longest tenured Duck commit and signing on signing day, decide he's not going to be part of it, but they do land the number one tackle in the portal, Isaiah World, 6'8", 309 pounds out of Nevada. He played all 892 snaps on offense last year, has not missed a game in the last 3 years.
Huge grab. And Oregon has had a lot of success with the transfer portal and offensive linemen, which isn't the easiest thing to do. Love that they went out and grabbed World, because you're going to be replacing at least one tackle. You're probably going to be replacing two. And then it just leads into an iron sharpens iron type of deal with the offensive linemen and offensive tackles that you already have in your system.
And I'm sorry, is Isaiah World like the greatest name for an O-lineman? It just seems like presence, big, like swallow you up.
It's a pretty good one. I still think like a Tanks Bigby would be a little bit better.
Or Bobby Pancakes, something like that.
Look, my future wife doesn't know this, but I'm shooting for a Tank Ortner. I'm just saying.
Nice.
Tank Ortner would be awesome.
Okay. Well, number one, and this is big, the Oregon State Beavers with a huge transfer portal coup. They land Malik Murphy out of Duke. He's 11-3 as a starter, started his career at Texas, moved on to Duke where he was very successful. He's 6'5", 230 pounds, and he is your Oregon State quarterback going into next year.
Good for the Beavs. Way to go, Trent Bray. This was a big win that you needed to have after the end of the season that you had. I mean, look, I felt like the Beavs started the year good. They just had so many stinking injuries that they weren't able to overcome it. And then what do? You try and get some new life, some new love. And with all the negative energy that's coming out of WSU and some of the Pac-12 failures to go out and get some of the Mountain West teams like UNLV, and now all of a sudden it looks like the Mountain West is starting to poach some of the Big Sky schools that you had had as your plan C to go up and grab. You finally get some good news. You go get Murphy. You also go and get Bowers, the tight end, out of BYU. Mm-hmm. So you show as an Oregon State program that you're not dead.
No, you're not. You're not folding. You're not falling by the wayside. They are doing things.
And that you can still go get quality players in the portal. Will that lead to, you know, an 8-4 season or a special 10-2 season? Probably not. But it will lead to some success on the field, and I love that.
And honestly, whether it does or not get you to 10-2, it gets you a lot closer. A real quarterback to operate, and the type of quarterback who can operate on his own a little bit when things break down. And in addition to just what he does on the field, I think you're onto something here. I think the message it sends to other recruits and the rest of college football that, like, we're not going away just because we have fewer resources now. They're going to find a way to make it work, or at least they're going to go down trying. And this is a huge coup for Trent Bray. So really, really good stuff for him and Oregon State coming down the pipe with a new quarterback in Malik Murphy. The Hot 5 of 5 is brought to you by Victorico's Mexican Food. A hit with the whole family. Order in-store, online, or delivered at your door at victoricos.com. When you think of flavor, think Victoricos. Our college football playoff poinsettia coming up next. Our picks and analysis of the four college football games coming your way this weekend, next primetime 1080 The Fan. That, of course, big game James Franklin, as he's known to some. They're going to be hosting the SMU Pony Express, the SMU Mustangs, on Saturday morning. But right now it's time for us to get into our college football playoff poinsettia. We've got four games coming up this weekend. And Will, I know you like to nerd out over this stuff. I do too. Yeah. I really want to get into the nitty gritty of these matchups and kind of get your gauge for who you think is going to, or who you think will be the four teams that emerge out of this weekend in advance to the next round of our first ever 12-team college football playoff. So the first one, we'll just jump right in here. The first one out of the chute is Indiana, the 10 seed, visiting Notre Dame, the 7 seed. That one in South Bend, that one with the highest get-in price, as both teams in-state, $390, I believe, to get into the building for that one. So interesting matchup here in that obviously Notre Dame creates and makes their own schedule every year. They went unblemished with the exception of a loss to NIU that really surprised people at home in South Bend. And then on the other side, all you have is Kurt Cignetti, who wins the Coach of the Year, going 11-1 on the season and only losing to Ohio State. How do you see this one?
Well, what Ohio State was able to do when they beat Indiana, and Michigan did this largely in the second half, and they weren't able to beat Indiana, but obviously they kept it close, is their defensive line was able to dominate the Indiana offensive line and play on in the backfield. And they were able to do this because they were just bigger and stronger. This Indiana team almost, to me, feels kind of like a group of five team, but because of the way their schedule worked out, which, by the way, people who are complaining about schedules in Power Four conferences, guess what? They're going to keep happening.
Yeah.
The conferences are too big.
They're diluted and watered down. You can't avoid them. So we're going to keep having this scenario. And I referenced before we even got into this, but like, Indiana might be awesome. They might not be good at all. And it's hard to know because they haven't had that many serious tests. It doesn't mean they haven't done great with what was laid out in front of them, but it's right. I'm not sure we can fully judge them based on that. And this might be, outside of Ohio State, their only real test that we're going to see this season.
Well, and my thing is, some people think Indiana's great. Some people think they're horrible. They're somewhere in between.
Okay.
They're a really good group of five team that had a favorable schedule, and they were able to take advantage of that. And they should be commended and rewarded, which they have been. The problem is when they've gone up against teams with better defensive linemen than their offensive linemen, they've struggled. They've gotten pushed around because what Indiana wants to do is they want to run the football. And then that's going to allow more of the box to get stuffed in. teams are going to go into more of a man coverage type of situation to load the box so that they can try and stop that run game. And then that's where Curtis Rourke comes in. And the guy's been fantastic all season long. He's really good at understanding where the best matchup is for him to be or where the hole in the defense is. And he takes advantage of that. Where you saw his downfall is against Ohio State when they took away that run game and you had to lean on O'Rourke to throw, he struggled because they were able to just dial up pressure. Sawyer and JT, they're just getting after him from their defensive end positions, and Rourke wasn't able to get the ball out of his hands fast enough. And so I think what you're really going to see here is how good is this Notre Dame front seven? Because this defense is supposed to be elite, mm-hmm. and this defensive secondary themselves is supposed to be what is kind of on the forefront of what this Notre Dame team is going to be. Indiana has fine wide receivers, but they're not going to blow past anyone. Like Oregon's wide receivers with Tez Johnson, Evan Stewart, Trayshawn Holden, they can run past people. What the Indiana wide receivers have to do is they have to understand how to go and high point a ball, how to go back shoulder on a football, because they're not going to quite get the separation that other teams will. And then against a Notre Dame defense, you're just not going to get much separation at all. If that defensive front seven can play in the backfield and take away the run game to where they don't have to commit more players into the box, that's where I think you see Indiana get into trouble. And then when it comes to the other side of the ball, Notre Dame loves to run the football. Yeah. Now,
they're pretty explosive doing that.
The strength,
or can be.
Right, and the strength of that Indiana team is on their defensive line when it comes to the defensive side. But if you have Love coming after you play after play after play, are you going to be able to stop him? Because the weakness of this Notre Dame team is that quarterback spot. I don't know that Indiana has the horses up front to force Riley Leonard to become the main focal point of that offense.
Yeah, Jeremiah Love, the running back for Notre Dame, on the season, 134 carries, almost 1,000 yards, 7.1 yards per carry.
Dude, he's a stud. And that Notre Dame always has good O-linemen, man.
Yeah, they do.
Don't be shocked if this game is a blowout in Notre Dame's favor, but depending on the weather and how if it's cold and it's wet and it's nasty, if there's some snow coming down, I wouldn't be shocked if Indiana keeps it close.
I'm glad you brought that up because forecast definitely in play here. They're saying snow showers between 22 and 32 degrees.
Under.
I've heard that. I've now heard a term thrown through the sports gambling world called snowvers, which is basically the entire public thinking that the snow is going to really slow the game down and driving down the total. If there isn't wind involved, there's not as much evidence to show that the snow actually hurts. In fact, sometimes it makes it harder for the defense to react and get their footing so the offenses can even have more success. I'm not going to dabble, I don't think, in the over-under this one, but it's a seven-point spread in favor of Notre Dame. It sounds like you think that they may be able to cover that?
My article this week for the BetQL, you can head over to odyssey.com/BetQL or just look up Big Wheel Bets and it'll pop up. I have Notre Dame -7.5. I think that they get it done. When I look at this Indiana team, they're a good team that got a favorable schedule that makes them look like a great team. And I think that Notre Dame has the horses up front on that defensive line to get after that running game and make Curtis Rourke try and beat them. And I don't think that they have the skill players on the outside to beat this Notre Dame secondary.
It feels like it could be the blueprint of that Ohio State game where Indiana comes in ready early and the stuff that they have scripted works fine, but they get into the point where it's just me versus you, hat on hat, man versus man, and they start to wither away a little bit. I love what Cignetti's done. I think they might be frisky early in this one, but I like you. I think Notre Dame comes out on top. I think they probably cover. Hard to know, but I do think it'll be Notre Dame emerging from that matchup. Let's move over to the next one. I believe it's 9 a.m., the whiteout at Penn State. Yeah. So we talked about that yesterday. That was the one where it's only $60 to get in, but maybe more weather in that one. You've got SMU, who barely got into the tournament because of a close loss in the conference title game to Clemson. I saw a stat that the average temperature for their games this season for SMU was 76 degrees. Dallas and all over the South. And they're going to go up to where it's about 20 degrees in State College. They're pretty explosive, this Mustangs offense. But Penn State, we just saw them be quite explosive in the Big Ten championship game. How do you see the Penn State-SMU matchup going?
Here's my thing. It's a simply for me, this was a weather play. SMU all time as a program, they are 2-4 when they play in games where it's 34 degrees or less. Okay. It's going to be in the low 20s, and then with wind gusts and wind chill, it's going to be closer to middle teens, right? So Penn State's used to it. SMU is not. SMU has an okay offensive line. Penn State's defensive line is top tier. And what Abdul Carter can do, he wrecks havoc. The only person who's been able to even kind of slow him down is Connor Lee of Oregon. Everyone else could not stop him this entire year. Then you go and look at what was Penn State able to do against Oregon's defensive line. They were able to run the football because their guards were getting to Harmon, they were getting to Cardwell, and they were knocking them off the ball on that inside zone. They did a great job of reaching the backside defensive tackle, not letting him get to the front side of the backside guard, and that's where they kept hitting the hole. And then in the second half, what did they do? They started using Drew Aller in the plus one run game, where all of a sudden everything became a read.
Yeah.
Aller is not going to knock your socks off with how fast he is. He's not, you know, a Cam Ward type. He's not even close to a Dylan Gabriel type. But what he does a good job of doing is just making you account for him. And if you're not going to account for him, he is going to kill you. You saw this SMU defense struggle with Cade Klubnik. It's not going to be the same type of success for Penn State, but I do like Penn State. I don't think that SMU is going to travel well. And I like Penn State to cover.
I like Penn State to cover, too. I heard a really interesting stat about Drew Aller, and I think he's been knocked a little bit this year for just kind of not being as good as people have billed him since the beginning when he got there. I don't think he's a world beater. He's not, like, lighting it on fire, but he is doing more than enough to help them win football games. You mentioned the plus one run game. Heard a stat about him. He's had 113 pass attempts this year with pressure in his face, and has had zero turnover-worthy throws out of those 113 pressures. He's just not going to hurt you. He might not torch you, but he will keep them in the game. He will let the running game keep them in the game. He will let the defense keep them in the game. He's just not going to play you out of it. And in a game where I think you have a personnel advantage, a weather advantage, a home stadium advantage, I'm leaning Penn State on this one too.
Yeah.
Let's get into the other two games for the first round of the playoff. We'll do that coming up on the other side of the break, but first we'll toss it over to Schultze, who has SportsCenter. Welcome back to Primetime, our college football playoff poinsettia. We're breaking down the four games from this weekend. We've got two down, two to go. The middle of the day, the afternoon affair on Saturday is between the last team in the field, the 12-seeded Clemson Tigers, visiting 5-seed Texas. I probably have the most interest in these final two games, and I think this Texas game is fascinating. We talked a little bit about Cade Klubnik yesterday and what he's able to do, what he can do in the plus one run game. Mm-hmm. And Texas is in this weird spot. We talked about them a little bit earlier in the show even, that they don't really trust Quinn Ewers down in the red zone. They have an embarrassment of riches at the wide receiver spot, but Ewers hasn't really gotten over on the teams that are the best ones they've played against. Seeing Arch Manning sparingly, it could be Quinn Ewers' last ride. There's a lot of weird vibes going around this Texas team right now after they frankly should have beat Georgia in the SEC championship. So I think you mentioned Texas favored by like 12 points in this one. Longhorns, Clemson, 1 o'clock in Austin on TNT and Max on Saturday. How do you see this one?
So to be honest with you, I actually have the under in this one. I got it at 52 right now.
Okay.
The reasoning for that is both of these offenses, when they have played better tier competition, so Texas with Georgia, I would say, even Texas with Texas A&M, when you look at Clemson, it would be Clemson versus, well, Georgia, Clemson versus Louisville, which isn't even that top tier of a defense, and then Clemson versus South Carolina, which is a top tier defense. And probably the best defensive line group in the country. they've both struggled offensively. Clemson, they still have a strong defense. Texas, the reason they were in that game and should have beat Georgia is because their defense kept it so close. So when I look at these two defenses and then the up and down nature of both offenses, I just feel like this is going to turn into a grinded out football game.
Yeah.
Then you're going to factor in the point that if it's a grinded out football game, that to me doesn't seem like Texas is going to win by two touchdowns. And
no.
That's essentially what they have to do. So to me, not only do I think the under, I like Clemson in this spot. And I wouldn't be shocked. Like if Clemson's able figure it out, doesn't that kind of seem like the most likely upset spot? And maybe that's just because I'm giving Clemson too much love and too much respect because it's Dabo Swinney, it's Clemson. But if they do figure it out, Clemson seems to be a team that when they're playing at their best could beat most teams in college football. And I would not say that Texas is a championship level team.
It's weird because Texas was in this spot all season where it seemed like they were basically like the second best team in the country. But until the end of SEC play, they'd played like one team with a winning record all year long.
Right.
So again, they're a little bit almost in that Indiana mode of like, do we really know? And then when they play the good team, that's Georgia, they've lost to them twice now. So I think that their defense is for real. I think that Clemson is obviously a little bit down. We've talked plenty about Dabo Swinney's struggles in recruiting and the transfer portal and that not being an area where they've excelled. They haven't been able to fortify their roster the way they have in years past. But it almost felt like early in the year they lost and like we just wrote them off. Like, it's not going to be them. They're not going to be part of it. And suddenly it does feel like they're a little bit live in this game. I'm not sure that they'll go out and win, but I don't see why they couldn't if they get a little positive momentum early,
right?
Especially if you're having controversy or issues at your quarterback position for Texas. I mean, if they go down early and Quinn throws a pick or Quinn's struggling to find his receivers, are there going to be chance for Arch? Is Sark going to start getting a little bit squirrely? There's a lot of things that I could see playing out that just makes this game teeter a little bit. So I probably favor Texas to come out of it with the win, but I'm like you. I like getting double-digit points in this one, and I could see it being a defensive struggle.
Well, and the weird thing for me is Texas had just seen Georgia struggle with Haynes King. What is Haynes King known for at Georgia Tech?
Running.
Being able to add himself into the plus one run game or just flat out running the
football. What did he run for against
Georgia?
Like 125, 150, something
like
that?
It was a lot. And then that opened up their passing game. So why would you not use Arch Manning, especially use him in the red zone in certain packages?
I was stunned that we didn't see him in the SEC championship game.
Which that tells me that he's trying to protect Quinn Ewers, because there's definitely a groundswell of support for Arch Manning at
Texas.
So
you think if they had gone to Arch and he'd been successful in the SEC championship, there would have been more of a forced need to go to him more in this game?
I think that there is a reason that they haven't used Arch, and I don't necessarily think that it's Arch. I think that they still believe, at least Sark still believes, that Quinn Ewers gives him the best chance to win. And I think that when he benched Quinn Ewers against Georgia, there was a big groundswell of support for Arch Manning, and he saw how it affected his quarterback psyche. Because you have not seen him play confident since.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if Sark is looking at it as, Ewers is still my guy, so I have to find a way to keep him at his most confident, and the way to do that is to not use Arch. But then you get into a point, especially in the playoffs, where it doesn't matter. You have to find a way to win the football game. So do you make that move? I think the X factor in this game is going to be Cade Klubnik's legs. Does Texas spy him? And if they do, with a QB spy, is he able to run away from that player? I don't love Klubnik's decision making from time to time. Like, they had driven down against South Carolina to get the game tying field goal. He was trying to go after a touchdown, which was fine. I didn't have an issue with it. I had an issue with where he put the football. He threw the football to the back shoulder of his tight end. It hits off his shoulder and it gets intercepted by South Carolina. If he puts that ball where it's supposed to be, it's a catch. It's a fine gain, but it's not a big play. I just feel like there are times and big moments where Klubnik has come up short. Can he not come up short in this game?
I feel like we can say that about almost every quarterback in the playoff this year.
That everyone like, but one.
Except for Gabriel.
Every
except
single for Dylan one. Gabriel. Except for one. Well, and I would say it about the Georgia backup QB.
Because sure, he hasn't had the chance.
We haven't seen him.
Fair enough. And then the final game, the one that all the Ducks fans will be keeping their eye on Saturday, the nightcap, the 5 o'clock kick from Columbus at the Shoe, number 8, Ohio State, number 9, Tennessee. There's so much drama around this one. The last time we saw Ohio State, they were getting their asses kicked by their rival. They were getting the flag planted at midfield. There was pepper spray. It was feeling like their coach was losing their team. You had players that are upset, seniors that couldn't beat their rival in 4 years, everyone writing this team off. Now you've got Tennessee, which apparently has scooped up a bunch of Ohio State tickets. They're saying they're going to have 30% of the stadium on Saturday, which seems like a lot, but you know that they're going to attend well. This one is the one that I am most excited for, and not just because the winner funnels into the matchup with Oregon in the Rose Bowl. I just don't know what to expect at all out of Ohio State. I think Tennessee is live to win this game straight up, but I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a reset, rejuvenated Buckeyes team either. What do you see in the matchup?
I think this game is going to boil down to Ohio State's offensive line and Tennessee's defensive line.
Okay.
When I look at this, Ohio State's offensive line, since they lost McLaughlin at center and since they've gone to now their third string left tackle, they've struggled to run the football. They've been running the football at about 3 yards a carry, and that wasn't against the greatest defenses aside from Michigan. Like, Michigan's defense is known for being a run-stopping defense, but really a run-stopping in the A-gaps defense. If you wanted to get to the edges, you would have thought that Ohio State could have done that, and frankly, I think they could have. They chose not to because they felt like they had to win.
Yeah, that's a whole mental issue going on with Day and company. Like,
right.
It's been said that over the years that Harbaugh specifically has been like, you guys aren't men because you can't run between the tackles, and like Day has taken it personally, and he's like out to prove that yes, we can, even though you could
so
just
far.
Beat them a different way or try right. to. But there's been this kind of push-pull battle going on. I was listening to a podcast with Kirk Herbstreit earlier in the week. His son, he has one son who's now committed to Michigan, but he has another one who was up at Ohio State. Walk on. I think he had a heart issue, and he hasn't been playing. But he went to their senior day event, and he said he was really moved. It was no media, and it was just friends and family of the program and coaches. And he said, like, to a man, every one of those seniors got up and said, "We got 4 games left, guys."
Yeah,
like,
they seem locked in.
And you know, I don't know if they'll have the horses. I worry a little bit about the freshman, Nico, for Tennessee and what he does in that environment. But he's been playing in the SEC all year. Some games, not so great. But honestly, it's one where I would not be surprised to see either outcome, either team, ending up in Pasadena.
I don't disagree with you. And that's why I think it's so going to be focused on what that Ohio State offensive line can do versus Tennessee's D-line. Because if Tennessee's D-line plays in the backfield and they take away that run game, which the teams that have beat Ohio State see Oregon save for 2 big runs and see Michigan in the entire game, Ohio State struggled. When you make Will Howard be the guy who beats you, he's shown that he can't always do that. The only team he was able to do that against was Penn State. And frankly, it was more because the offensive line and the run game got going at the very end against Penn State. It wasn't because Will Howard was some otherworldly player. So if Tennessee is able to play on the other side of the field when they're going up against Ohio State, when it's defense versus offense, I worry about what Ohio State's going to do. Nico has been another one of those quarterbacks where he beats the teams he's supposed to beat, save Arkansas, and he has struggled against defenses and teams that he wasn't supposed to beat. Can he take that next step forward? The other thing, though, when I look at this, and a lot of people forget, Tennessee has an All-American running back in Dylan Sampson.
Mm-hmm.
That guy is a road grader. And so if Tennessee's O-line is able to open up a couple holes, don't be shocked if that's where the big play comes from Tennessee. When you think of Josh Heupel's offense, you think big bombs from Hendon Hooker or from Milton. Don't be shocked if this is more of a grinded-out type of game, similar to what Tennessee did to Oklahoma.
Yeah, I've heard it suggested that basically if Tennessee can do that, that'll be the first direction they try to go. That if they try to keep Nico out of trouble, lean on their defense, lean on their run game, and basically not have to be in a position where they risk it with the biscuit. And
right.
If Ohio State comes out firing, though, if Will Howard is on, if that running game is good, and you have to play catch-up or have to keep up with that, then they may just cut it loose with Nico, but I don't think that's the first place that they go.
It almost feels like both teams are going to do everything in their power to hide their quarterback. And I still think that Nico, he's so young, there's potential for him to grow and grow into what everyone thinks he can be. Because when you see moments of it, it's, oh my God, that kid can be the best player in college football. And he could do it within a year or two, right? And with Josh Heupel as your QB coach, I think that you can make that move. The question is while you had 2 to 3 weeks off, while you didn't play in the SEC championship game and you were preparing for this playoff game because you knew you were in the playoffs, you just didn't know who you were playing, was Nico able to take enough of a step forward to be that viable option? Is he able to get those big plays when they need it? Because if they get the big plays, that's going to open up more for Samson. And then I really think that Tennessee could run away with it. I wouldn't be shocked if Ohio State wins this game. I wouldn't be shocked if Tennessee wins this game. But I would be shocked if Tennessee didn't cover this game.
Okay. Well, let's wrap those games, those four games, really quick. In order, just winners. You like Notre Dame?
I love
over Notre Dame. Over Indiana. Mm-hmm. You like Penn State over SMU.
Like Penn State, yep.
You like Clemson, or you're like Clemson to cover, not to win.
I like Clemson to cover. I'm gonna say Texas.
Okay,
but I might sprinkle a little on Clemson money line.
And then Tennessee, Ohio State. You taking the Vols?
I'm taking the Vols to cover. I think I'm taking them to win.
All right, we will load up the rest of the bracket, make our predictions for how the college football playoff shakes out after that first round, and we will do that next. You're listening to Primetime, 1080 The Fan. Careening into the club hour, we, of course, have to get to our story from yesterday that was left on the shelf. 'Tis the season for fractured penises.
You gotta know, man.
Also, the new sport taking the sporting world by storm that could cause that.
Oh, God. As long as it's not pickleball.
Oh, I know. I know what you're talking about.
Do you?
I'm pretty sure this sport is hilarious.
You ready to test your manhood? We'll talk about it in the club.
I'm not testing my manhood that strongly. That is a, look, that's a sport where guys need to go talk to girls.
This is a club topic. You hear the average size of hmms has gone up over the last 25 years, supposedly.
I had not heard that.
I don't subscribe to that website.
So much penis news.
I cannot believe it, but apparently it's up near 6 now, which I just think means guys are lying. Like, come on.
It seems like 4 too many.
We also have the perfect holiday present for Souk that I saw come across my timeline today, and an odd holiday cocktail if we have the time for it. But right now we need to wrap up our college football playoff predictions because the playoff does start tomorrow as Indiana takes on Notre Dame. So we got your winners, Will, from those first four games. Mm-hmm. Let's go back through the bracket again then as far as the order of play. So the first game in the quarterfinal round is going to be number 3 Boise State on New Year's Eve against the winner of Penn State SMU. You had Penn State in that game. Do you like Penn State to push through Boise State and make it onto the next round?
Yeah, they just have a better front seven defensively. I think that Penn State plays in the backfield of Boise State. Now, Boise State does have a fairly good defensive line. The problem is that Oregon, and they were largely not with the starting unit that they've had for most of this year, was able to run on that Boise State defense. I think Penn State, with their offensive line, might be a scooch better when it comes to running the football. I think that they're going to be able to run all over Boise State, and I think they win that game.
So then the 10 a.m. game, New Year's Day, is going to be the 4-seed Arizona State Sun Devils, led by former Ducks offensive coordinator Kenny Dillingham, and the West Lynn native Sam Levitt at quarterback, taking on the winner of that Texas-Clemson matchup. You said that was a tough one to call, but Texas, you're leaning towards just winning that game outright. If it is Texas-Arizona State, or even if it's Clemson-Arizona State, do you have the Devils moving on, or do you have the team that comes out of that first game trumping the Sun Devils?
I probably have the team that comes out of that first game strictly because their defense is going to be stronger than Arizona State's. Like, I like what Arizona State is able to do offensively, right? Cam Scataboo, he's ranked as the third best player in the playoff. He's like a bowling ball with knives when he's running. Like, he's hard to bring down. He's so fluid in his movements. His stability, when he gets hit, he doesn't fall down off the first hit. Sometimes you see him take massive shots and he almost like skids 2 or 3 yards and he just keeps running forward like he's fine.
His balance is unbelievable.
It's It's second to none. Well, maybe second to Ashton Jeanty, and then that's about it. And then Sam Levitt, what he's been able to do, he can run when he needs to. He really loves that play-action pass game that gets defenses sucked into the box. He's able to throw deep on them. They're going to be missing their wide receiver Tyson again, I believe. They missed him in the Big 12 championship game.
Yeah, that's big.
I just worry about when you play a top-tier defense like Clemson or Texas is going to have, are they able to nullify Scataboo? And if they are able to do that, you're trusting it and putting it all on Levitt's shoulders. That seems like a big ask. Now, that being said, I still think that this Arizona State team and what Dillingham is building for the future, don't be shocked if you see Arizona State in a few more playoffs in the next couple of years.
And then the 2 o'clock kickoff, as it always is on New Year's Day, the granddaddy of them all, with number one seed Oregon taking on the winner of Tennessee, Ohio State. We talked about this a little bit on Ducks Roundtable. We haven't talked about it yet on this show. Which team do you... It's interesting. We did ask Lanning about prepping for a team the second time around versus the first time, but
yeah.
We know that this Oregon team could beat this Ohio State team because we've seen it. Ohio State's had a little bit of attrition. They've lost some people on their offensive line. We haven't seen Tennessee. Which team is a better matchup, do you believe, for Oregon in this game, regardless of who you think is going to win that Tennessee-Ohio State matchup?
I think it's Ohio State, and the reason that I think it's Ohio State is because you've already seen your team have success against that offensive line, and you had that success when their offensive line was at full strength and when your defensive line was not. Remember, on Wednesday or Thursday, Jordan Burch gets hurt that week.
That's
so
right.
He doesn't even play in that football game.
Yep.
Then you have to remember that they had their number one left tackle still, and they still had McLaughlin at center. They've now gone through two other left tackles. They're on to the guy who's playing tackle at on the left side right now. He was originally their left guard. He had to bump outside.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough transition, and he's done it well, but that's still a tough move from a player who is an All-American guard to bump out to tackle. It's just a different skill set that you need. Then you're going to throw in the fact that Mateo Uiagalelei dominated in that game.
Yep.
Now you're going to get your number one defensive end, Jordan Burch, back. I just think that it sets up better for your defensive line to take away that run game and put the ball in Will Howard's hands. I don't think that Will Howard would be able to beat this Oregon Ducks secondary like he would need to.
And you also said that you thought it may be Tennessee that's coming out of that matchup. So how does Oregon match up with the Vols, and then how do you potentially see that game shaping up? Do you like Oregon to advance?
I would like Oregon to advance. Here is the problem that Oregon is going to have to face: that Tennessee offensive line, they're road graders, and you just went up against a road grading offensive line in Penn State.
Yeah.
And they got the better of you.
Yeah,
like
they
it
did.
Wasn't you look at the Ohio State rush line against Oregon, you're like, oh wow, Ohio State really ran the ball well. And then you go back through and it's like, oh, they had a 40-yard run and like a 65-yard run.
Yeah, the averages were a little skewed.
And that's where the majority of their rushing yards came from. Penn State gassed you, mm-hmm. and they continued to get 8 to 12 yards a pop, and they did it with Singleton, and they did it with Allen. So if this Tennessee offensive line can get going, which they have all year, now you're throwing in, yeah, it's one running back, but again, Samson is an All-American, and he's been a large factor in why this Tennessee offense has been able to be so successful this year. It isn't the typical Josh Heupel offense where it's run and gun. They're slowing things down. They're relying on their defense, and they're relying on Samson in that run game. So can Oregon stuff the box and trust their secondary players, who they might have to put on an island more often than they normally would like to come up and make big plays?
And then finally, the last game of the day is going to be number two Georgia hosting, or not hosting, I should say. It might as well be, though. It's down at the Sugar Bowl.
Right.
But it'll be Georgia taking on the winner of Notre Dame, Indiana. You believed that that would be Notre Dame. And this is where it gets interesting, because Carson Beck is definitely out. So it's either going to be Gunnar Stockton or the third kid who came in,
which is Rashada.
Yeah, that's right, Rashada.
Mm-hmm.
Does Georgia advance out of this game, or do they get upset here?
I think with how good their defense is when they play at a top tier, they're going to keep the game close. You know? And so I think that kind of plays into Notre Dame. Like, if they start using Riley Leonard in the plus one run game, it's all going to be about Stockton. He's the biggest question mark, because if Carson Beck isn't going, Carson Beck, as many issues as he had this year, and he was clearly a disappointment, because you were talking about him potentially being the number one overall pick.
Yeah.
And that is clearly not what he is. Nope. He is not that caliber of a quarterback. He still found ways to win football games. He still found a way when they needed a big throw or they needed an easy completion. He found a way to get that done. Can Stockton do that? I don't know. What you saw against a very good Texas defensive front and secondary, aside from one bad interception, is Stockton not turn the ball over. He turned into a game manager. Georgia's teams almost are at their best when they've had that game manager. Look at what they did with
Stetson Bennett.
Right. Look at what they did with Stetson Bennett. That dude's almost already out of the NFL. Like he's not anything special. He's just a game manager. So can Stockton be that? And then can they run the football against this Notre Dame team where they're going to make Stockton beat them, especially with the secondary that they have? You know they're going to load the box. So can Georgia get the run game going? I think that right now I lean Notre Dame, and that doesn't feel good.
I'm with you on that. I think that Notre Dame is coming out of that, and we'll go rapid fire here through to the semifinals, because based on that analysis, you've essentially got Texas versus Oregon in the Cotton Bowl, and you've got Penn State versus Notre Dame in the Orange Bowl. Who do you like to come out of each of those games?
These are simple. It's the quarterback battle, and I like Oregon's quarterback better than I like Texas's quarterback.
Fair
enough. I like Penn State's quarterback more than I like Notre Dame's quarterback.
So you think we may be getting a rematch of the Big Ten title for the college football championship?
Which makes me feel weird as I go and I start picking it through. But if Penn State, and I think this is possible, if they can play like they did in the Big Ten championship game, they're that good. They really are. They really went blow for blow until the very end where Aller makes another interception. But I'll tell you right now, I didn't feel good as someone watching that game if I'm an Oregon fan.
Yep.
When Penn State gets the ball at the very end of the game and your defense hasn't stopped them all game other than an interception. And Aller threw an okay ball. It was a better play by Oregon's secondary there. It was a better play by the defensive back. So, yeah, man, I think with Penn State's schedule and what's laid out in front of them, don't be shocked if you see them in a final.
Yeah.
It's really easy. And
I think
that's
the path sets up nicely for them.
It's unfortunate for everyone that's not a Nittany Lion fan.
Well, I cannot wait for this thing to kick off. It starts tomorrow afternoon. Actually, a truncated version of Primetime Tomorrow will be off the air at 4:30, getting you set for that kickoff of Indiana-Notre Dame at 5 o'clock. Will seems to like Oregon and Penn State in the final. You got the Ducks winning the whole thing?
Yes, I do. I think that Oregon gets it done. They're the closest that we've seen this year to an elite team, and to me, they just are going to find a way to keep rolling.
I love it. I'm with it. As I said on the very first Ducks roundtable of the year, my prediction was undefeated and a national title. I can't back off of that now. I will join you on that. I'll say it's going to be Oregon over Notre Dame in the final, but I also think that it'll be a Notre Dame-Penn State matchup in the semis. So we will see what happens. It all starts tomorrow, but coming up next, it's the club hour. We have to get into holiday penis fractures and the sport that could cause them. That's coming up next. Primetime, 1080 The Fan.